Hey everybody, welcome to the Slick Tree Podcast. I'm your host, Colby Langford. The point of this show is to help improve ourselves as dogmen and to raise the quality of the dogs on the end of our lead. So let's settle in, turn the volume up, and let's see if we can't learn a trick or two together from our guests.
He was still probably 6.5, 7 months old. He's a May puppy. So, you know, he was just kind of ready to go that coon season and started out, you know, doing pretty good. He was hunting with his mother, Roxy, a little bit here and there and some by himself. We were treeing some coon. He was got probably, you know, 2-3 weeks in. He was treeing about a coon a night. And he was always catching them. Right. I mean, my dad probably for the first year and a half of his life really didn't like Joe as much as I like Joe. Because a lot of times we'd hunt together, Joe would end up catching coon, you know, 400 or 500 yards, 600 yards from you. And time you got there, he'd already been done with it and was back to you. So you wasn't getting those. And, you know, with this season, you know, with him being so young, you know, I was pleased with the progress he was making for sure. I mean, like I said, about every night he was treeing coon, getting it. Well, probably mid-December, it got pretty cold. And I mean, we got an ice storm and some snow on top of it. And of course, anybody that knew me, especially at that time, you know, it didn't matter. I just always hunted. But the coon getting was a whole lot less. And I mean, we'd win night here, night there, and without getting anything. And probably 3-4 nights, you know, with him not treeing anything, the Roxy female had treed a couple, but I mean, he just really hadn't found anything to get going. He started treeing possums. And it's funny because, you know, he hadn't treed a possum to that point. And the first night, you know, I just petted him, sent him on, and it kind of like that. The next night, treated another possum, you know, the coon still dealing. And we probably went, you know, probably 3-4 weeks with having that snow ice mix, and it was just, you know, in the low single digits or teen weather. We normally don't get that type of weather for very long here, but I mean, after a while, I was like, what am I doing? He's 6-7 months old, you know, so I just started knocking the possums out to him. And long story short, you know, probably he's seen 100 plus possums that year. And I mean, it just was one thing after another. When the snow melted off and everything got better, he went back to treating coons again, petted him up, just rocked on. And, you know, for his whole life, never treed probably, you know, 2 or 3 possums the rest of his life. But always the funniest part about that story is the following year, Burke Schuster and myself, we was out hunting, and Joe treated a couple coon, and we're sitting there, and a couple young hounds came in with us. Well, we just stuck around till them guys got there and got telling stories a little bit, and he was telling me that how well his hound was doing. And you know, and he said he's been so impressed that they hadn't treated a possum all year. And I just told him, I said, well, you're welcome. And that guy looked at me real weird. And Burke, he just laughed and laughed because he knew, you know, what I meant. Joe had deleted the possum out of the area. You know, it was easier at the time to treat you because of old Joe.
Yeah.
But, you know, Joe taught me a lot. And, you know, that was one. You know, a lot of people are so afraid to, you know, show them a possum or whatever. And, you know, these dogs are smart, you know, and they figured out pretty quick. And I mean, even that young of age, when weather got back to treeing coon, he wanted to tree coon. He goes, the possums wasn't a big deal to him. But like I said, he went most of his life, you know, never hardly treeing a possum. Said you count on one hand. And, you know, he lived till probably 14. You know, he was born around 2002 and went, I think it was 2016 when he finally gave it up. And but like I said, old Joe was a good old dog.
He sure was. I can remember hunting with him. But hey, everybody, today you are listening to the Slick Tree Podcast. I'm your host, Colby Langford, and this is another installment of the Good Old Dog series. Today we are here with Nick Clark, a longtime friend of mine, and we are talking about Clark's one-eyed, two-toed Joe. Did I get that right, or did I get them two mixed up?
No, he's definitely a two-toed Joe, but like I said, talking about his one eye, you know, Joe lost that eye, you know, the use of that eye probably at two. We was hunting up in Iowa, and I mean, the coon up there, the smallest coon I think we treed was, you know, 21, 22 pounds, and got one that they caught on the ground that ended up, you know, measuring from nose to tail 48 inches. But that was the eye incident with Joe. Joe had a hold of it. Another dog pulled it away and then let go and ran, and it got a hold of Joe right in the face and damaged that eye. And we, you know, spent weeks doctored in treatment, and he could see shadows out of it, you know, I mean, but like I said, he definitely lost the use out of that eye and ended up, you know, kind of having a rough year because he'd always tilt his head down when he was fighting anything. And but I mean, you wouldn't know how he hunted and how he went, but he had basically one eye. So
yeah, just so that everybody's got a little background between us, I met Nick in, it was probably about 2010-ish, maybe 2011. Nick was hosting the NKC Youth World Hunts over by Columbia, Missouri. And I brought my Dixie dog over there and ended up having some kids hunt her for a couple different years. And that was how I got to know Nick. And we ended up going to Jamestown one year together. And I'd come over and hunt with him on occasion in the wintertime. Joe was a nice dog. Did you squirrel hunt him much, or was he just mostly a coon dog?
So, you know, it was always presumed that Joe would never tree a coon, but I mean, that wasn't true. But the answer to that, you know, no, I didn't hunt him too much on squirrel hunts. At the time, had a half sister to him called the Super Freak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when she was 9 months old, we'd won the world squirrel hunt with her. And I mean, she was just an absolute, you know, beast in the woods and the squirrel woods. And being at the same age, you know, and kind of their hunt styles and stuff like that, you know, I had at the time a young dog that was super nice to take to the woods in the day. And Joe, his motor and just kind of how he hunted, his hunt style was kind of more coon. And I mean, you know, my preference anyways, if I had a choice to do one or the other, I'm going to coon hunt. But I'd hunt him some, you know, during the day. Where I hunted him the most in the daytime, we'd go up to the, you know, these competition hunts and up to Iowa and wherever. And at the time, our two oldest kids used to go with us quite a bit, and my nephew, and they always wanted to hunt, and so I'd let them hunt Super Freak or one of the better squirrel dogs, and a lot of times I'd hunt Joe.
Gotcha.
And, you know, Joe, like I said, I'm not going to tell you he was ever a world beater squirrel dog, because I just never really pushed him on that. I didn't want him for that, but he would definitely tree squirrels. And, I mean, he's placed in several squirrel hunts over the years and stuff, but his variety was definitely coon. I mean, he was a true top-end coon dog. And I mean, like I said, I'd always, you know, you always hear people tell you that, you know, you talk more about a dog after they're gone better, and I probably don't give him justice than how I talk to him. That anybody that's hunted with him for a few nights understands that he was 100% a coon dog, and the accuracy and the brains and, you know, everything.
How did you end up with Joe? Where was he bred at?
I raised Joe. Joe, I had the female called Clark's Roxy that was went back to my grandpa's, you know, line of breeding and Uncle Teddy's. She's out of the Campbell's Ring and Tulip, and you know, Tulip was out of Pistol Pete and Moon Girl, and then the Ring went back to Mountain Susie and Butcher Sam and Kimmer's Old Rough. And you know, she was kind of a saddleback female. She was super nice. I mean, probably pretty wise, built wise for a female. I mean, she was super nice. And then my parents owned Junior Jukebox, which Junior Jukebox was out of Jukebox and Simple Pleasure Dolly. So, you know, went back to Alan Franklin's Thunder. And, you know, I mean, we had a lot of good breeding in there, and, you know, the Queen was in there. And, but I raised Joe here. He was a litter of four and out of the Roxy female. But yeah, he was born and raised here.
Tell us a little bit about how you like to start dogs and how you started Joe, as far as just different methods you used.
So for me, and still today, the easiest way to start a dog is to hunt. I mean, just to go. And, you know, at that time, you know, I had Roxy, then I had a female called Ramblin' Rosie, which that was the Super Freaks female. And so I didn't have a ton of dogs, and Roxy was a fairly good coon dog, fairly decent squirrel dog. Ramblin' Rosie, to me, she was, you don't see it very often anymore, and what I kind of strive for was, she definitely, you hunted her in the daytime, and she kind of, you know, hunted squirrel, kind of high-headed, fast, and shorter loops, you know, 200-250 yard circles. And then at night, after you hunted two or three nights, she'd, you know, kind of slow down a little bit. She'd get out 500-600 yards, 700 yards. And so that's kind of what I started in with. But I, you know, I'm a fan of the coon cage. I'm a fan of that to a minimum. But, you know, to me, just taking them, you know, a lot of people tell you to start a dog by themselves, and I'm not disagreeing with that at all. But a lot of people, including myself, you know, when you take a 5, 6, 7 month old puppy and you're just taking walks in the woods, sometimes, you know, you got to wait till something lucky happens. And, you know, so to add in that environment with another dog that is doing it. And, you know, Joe, like I said, both Joe and Freak, they were anomalies on the fact that, you know, it didn't take much to get him started. I mean, when I took Joe out, Joe just went, you know, I mean, he was a circle loop dog, but it was at 6, 7 months old, it was 600-700 yard circles. Uh-huh. I mean, that dog covered ground deal. The Roxy female, and Joe kind of carried this trait of her, they didn't run. You know, a lot of times you see these guys are snapping his dog, and this dog is running just full speed. And, you know, I don't know if I'm a fan of that. I want a dog to go. But, you know, to me, the Roxy and Joe had that, they just had a pace. I mean, I always thought it was funny, you know, you'd cut them loose and they'd make that 500-600 yard loop over and over again. But like, if you had a younger dog with them, that first loop, that pup may be with them. The second loop, they're a little bit behind it. By the third loop, and, you know, and you watch the pup and stuff, and it looks like they're running, and, you know, Joe and them are just jogging. You know, they just, but they could hold that pace for so long. And, you know, Joe was by far the quickest conditioning dog. You could put him up for, you know, 3 or 4 months, hunting for 2 or 3 days, and it's like you hunted him for a year. You know, he got in condition so fast, but he didn't do a lot of things that wore itself out. But to me, you know, starting a dog, you know, time is probably the biggest factor, which, you know, older we get, the harder it seems to find that. Back when I had them, it seemed like I had a lot more time than I do today, or put more time to it. But there's not a book, right? I mean, that's the thing about each dog. Every dog's different. To me, you know, starting a dog on squirrel or coon or whatever, I've always been one. Don't limit your hunting. You know, don't pick one. If you got time to go out at night, go. If you got time to do the day, when you there's already enough excuses to not get in the woods. So if you give yourself more, it's going to do less for your dog. And you know, like I said, with Freak, you know, it kind of made it a little easier because I wasn't trying to do as much. You know, at the time, I had a one that started so fast on squirrel and one that wanted to be a coon dog or, you know, acted like it for sure. So it was a little bit more time to spend, a little bit more direction on that. And I'm a big fan of the combination. You know, I liked, and I still today like to haul one dog, compete in it all. And, you know, at that time, I just had two of them that, you know, one was extremely good quick on squirrels and one was a coon dog. But I mean, that's kind of the take on, you know, starting. There's not a magic, you know, trick to it except, you know, time and put them in the woods, give them the opportunities. And, you know, if you leave them on the chain, the, I mean, one of my, you know, stories on this, on, you know, think about how much time it takes and stuff like that, where, you know, I remembered one of my friends, Everett, had sold a pup to a guy over in Indiana, and we was at the Eleanor hunt, and this pup was probably, you know, 6, 7 months old, and he came to me and asked if we would buy it back, and which I told him, I said, you know, sure, you know, what's the deal? And he told me he just wasn't interested in nothing. And I kind of asked him what he was doing, and he told me he was, you know, spent tons and tons of time, you know, working with this dog. And, you know, every Sunday after church, he took it to an hour to the park, and it never showed interest in squirrel. And I asked him, I said, so you're spending tons of time, which is an hour a week at the park. And he goes, yes. He said, a lot of time. I've been doing that. So, you know, the thing too, with everybody's thought on how much time, you know, that guy truly believed that he was putting a lot of time into that dog, which, I mean, you've been in the dogs long enough, and I have too. You know, that dog didn't even get his pin energy out in that amount of time a week. So, and, you know, luckily, like I said, with Joe and Freak, and did, and for most of my life with coon season, you know, I've enjoyed it enough that I mean, very few nights that I miss. I mean, even today, without being anything, I still try to go every night. Back then, I hunted every night. And I mean, to me, what makes a dog is wearing them boots out for sure.
So what would you say whenever Joe was in his prime? You mentioned that he would run loops like that, but how would you expect a hunt to go? And would you normally hunt him with other dogs? Which I know that you mostly pleasure hunted, like you were saying, hunting every night. But what would a normal hunt look like from the time you cut dogs loose in the woods? Are you casting them? Are you walking them?
So, Joe was one of the few coon dogs, you know, cur dogs for sure that I had. I had a few others. I'm a walk hunter. I don't even, you know, trust me, there's nights that, you know, it's misting and snow and cold that, yeah, I wouldn't mind a road hunt a little bit and stuff like that. But I'm a walk hunter, and it's more me than the dogs. But Joe was one that he would go, you know, Joe was unique. The same with Roxy. His mother was like this. Joe would go, you know, that first loop was going to be 500, 600 yards. When you cut him loose, no matter if you dumped him by himself or dumped him with five dogs, you know, he was the most consistent style of hunter that I ever had. But you'd cut him loose, he'd make that first 5 or 6. If you didn't move, he would always kind of look, you know, kind of come in. He never very often came all the way to you. He came to you, but if you didn't move, didn't do nothing, didn't give him a direction to go, he'd just make that same loop, but it'd be 800, 900 yards. I mean, if you kept standing there, Joe would go a mile. But he did it, and you know, Joe was easy to handle because if you came in when he checked in, if you had was going down this way, then he kind of always kept his loops in front of you. You know, he, like I said, it wasn't he was easy to hunt. He kind of went directional of you, and he didn't normally come waste too much time coming in and out once he knew where you was at. You know, yeah. His mother, Roxy, was the same way, you know, all the time. We, you know, that's back, you know, we had the beep beep tracking systems that you couldn't carry, right? And all the, you know, probably for that first 2-3 weeks I hunted her, I always thought she just ran off and was gone, because the only time you ever seen her is if she treed. And one night we was kind of in a spot hunting some field pines and stuff like that, so I carried it, and basically she'd come in 100-150 yards, but when she knew where you was at, she just went away. You know, she never wasted that extra energy coming in. And Joe kind of was the same way on that. He just made loops, stayed with you. You know, like I said, if you turned left and started walking that way, when he checked in, he just looped out in front of you. But yeah, like I said, with him, we hunted him with, you know, at that time, I was lucky enough, my buddy Everett Hurley was hunting a lot. Had the Hurley's Kermit dog, and, you know, and then Eddie Stevens, yeah, became friends with Eddie up north, and that's kind of where we had all the Missouri State hunts and the stuff like that at. And I mean, we'd go up there, I'd, you know, bring a couple, Everett have a dog, Eddie would have a couple, and, you know, everybody always said that, you know, they're worried about dogs being mean, and I just never seen these dogs. Like I said, we'd throw 5 male dogs in a dog box and go hunt, and never had problems in the woods. But it, to me, Joe was by far, if you could duplicate his hunt style, especially at night, because he didn't run off. He was a true loop dog. I mean, when you watch the Garmin, you know, I mean, he'd cut out to the right, you know, go out and circle back around and come back in left. And to me, those that I've had like that has always been, they cover so much ground. You know, when a dog goes a mile straight up in front of you, you know, probably covers less ground than that circle loop dog. And for me, wanting to walk hunt, I mean, again, I could go where I wanted to and get where I wanted to be. So,
what's his mouth like?
So Joe had a big bark, but probably the only thing that he's ever criticized his, you know, whole life was his tree style. But he was the dog that taught me really what I wanted in tree style. Because Joe was, he had a big roar bark, and he kind of had a double roar, you know, type of deal when he barked. But Joe barked 40 to 45 barks a minute on a tree. And I mean, you could hear him. You never had to stop and wait. You know, didn't have to find out where he's at. He barked enough. And I've hunted with hound guys and stuff like that. And I mean, he'd tree, you know, 6-7 coon, and their dog would tree nothing. And all they talked about is how he wasn't a hard tree dog. And, you know, and the thing is, he wasn't. But I never kind of understood that for a long time. You know, I was like, man, that's crazy. You know, again, your dog don't tree any. Mine trees the coon, stays there, barks the whole time, has a coon every time, and you're unimpressed. And the thing is, he sat right at the tree and just treed. You know, I mean, like I said, it was, to me, later on in life, I mean, he was the dog that taught me if I could duplicate that part of it, I would have it 100 times. The super freak, you know, they couldn't even count her in a treeing contest. I mean, she tripled crop, but I mean, you know, it was ungodly. I mean, how much you barked. You know, the half brother that Bubba shot the jukebox and my dad had was, you know, a super nice coon dog too. Barked probably 85 to 100 barks a minute. I mean, just was definitely tree style, right? On the tree, just blowing the top out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just kind of going to reference, you know, Bubba shot the jukebox and Joe, you know, quality of coon dog, probably close. But we're, Joe, to me, was 10 times better. You know, like Dad and I, we used to go up north and hunt a lot. We'd just go up there and camp for a week and coon hunt and do it. we'd go up like that, and at the time, you know, we'd hunt basically dark to dawn, you know, for 5, 6, 7 nights. And by the third, fourth night, then dogs wouldn't get out of the box. Joe acted like he'd done things for the first time. You know, like I said, Joe just, he didn't waste energy. You know, I mean, he was as consistent. Like I said, you didn't see him running. You didn't do it. You know, he had that pace, and it just seemed like it was kind of like that runner jogger pace. You know, it's something he could go forever. Treeing, you know, Bubba and them would be, you know, especially on the warmer night, would be slobber mouth, couldn't hardly breathe. You know, looking for water. You know, Joe, he was good to go. And, you know, I want a dog that trees good, that you can hear, that you don't have to go look for. But I'm okay with a dog that it doesn't give me tree style points. Mm-hmm. I want an accurate dog that doesn't, and that's where Joe, it's what he was. I mean, he, you know, he was a solid tree dog. I mean, like I said, just he didn't miss. I think a lot of times, you know, he, if he couldn't mess with something, you know, he didn't waste too much time with it. He just went and found something that he did. You know, I mean, I remember the one of the nights that you and I hunted, you know, we went with Roy Williams heading down towards Ashland, and we treed a handful of coon and stuff like that. But we came across the pond, and all the dogs, I mean, it was a pretty good race. And, you know, they ran it, you know, probably 400 or 500 yards, and they ended up treeing in a corner post woven wire fence with a little bushy tree on it. You remember this hunt?
I'm not quite with you yet.
All right. Well, it was one, it was where, when all the other dogs are there except Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe, yep, went all the way across the pasture, and there was, mm-hmm, you know, 10, 12 huge oak trees, pin oak trees, you know, probably 600, 700 yards across the pasture. And when we got all the dogs, which where they was at, you know, that coon 100% went up that post, went into that tree and out the other side, having the woven wire. And, you know, like I said, where Joe, you know, Joe was always for sure of himself. And like I said, and that was one of them nights where he, you know, kind of proved it. He just did that over and over again. And, you know, like I said, with him, he didn't miss the creeks. You know, to me, he was probably the smartest, even young dog. You know, a lot of young dogs, they get hung up in the creek and they waller and waller. He used to watch Joe all the time. You know, he'd get to that crack, all the other dogs would be milling and milling. You'd just see Joe go down the bank, go for a little ways, bell across water, come back to bank. You know, Joe was smart enough. He did, instead of trying to track it, he just found where it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say, you know, there's them type of things. I mean, he had a brain good to go along with it, and just a different type of brain. But, yeah, I was going to say, again, his tree style, though, if he's going to knock him, which, to me, I still didn't knock it because he just tree tuned, but that's probably with the most I hear, you know, was about that.
Yeah, and you can definitely, I've seen a lot of dogs that I love the way they tree, and but you can sit there and watch them wear themselves out, especially if it's warm. Like, yeah, they can't just sit there and hammer when it's warm and it not affect them. You pull them off tree and they'll be half worn out just from treeing, not from hunting so much. But like I said, I still like a hard tree dog.
Well, I mean, again, I'm not going to knock it either. They're always impressive. I mean, like I said, with the Freak and, you know, Bowshot Duke, all them dogs that, you know, when they get on the tree like that and hammer, there's no doubt it's impressive. But, you know, if you're going out for an hour or 2 hours and going home, then dogs will do. If you're going to hunt all night, after night, after night, you'll have to take a break because your dog won't get out of the box. Yeah. That's what it, you know, proved to me. So, like I said, I mean, it, because probably prior to Joe, I mean, if you'd asked me if I wanted a dog like that, I'd have told you no. After having him, you know, I liked it probably more. There was tons of nights. I mean, tons of nights we'd go hunt with everybody. And everybody else's dogs are hanging around walking with his gun, and you know, and he's just still out there treeing coons.
Talking about how smart he was, I believe I remember you recalling a story to me on one of the nights we were hunting, but you had said that something he got to where he would do at one point in life quite a bit was he'd go in and get treed a long ways off. Well, this was back when hides were worth quite a bit still. But you'd go in, knock the coon out, and you'd send the dogs on, and he would backtrack back from where he'd been and tree two or three more, like if they'd been a group of three coons running in a group.
Yeah, always. I mean, like I said, that was the, you know, and there's several cur dogs that are a little bit more like that, but a lot of them, you know, I mean, like I said, his brain just worked a little bit different to understood that a lot of times if there's one, there's another one. And, you know, a lot of the dogs that I've owned, you can turn them loose and stuff, but they'll piddle around and stuff. And, you know, I've had some that does a good job treating that, but he always, you know, you kick him loose and let him go. And, you know, probably, you know, one of my, again, wish we kind of had the iPhones and the stuff, the pictures and all the stuff we did, but Corey Cummins and myself, it snowed. I mean, we probably had, you know, a foot of snow, and it got warm the next day, and, you know, it probably melted the first, you know, 4 inches off, but it cooled down real quick again that night. It was in, you know, probably in the 20s, and Corey called and asked me if I was going, and which, of course, I told him, I said, I'm going. He said that he wanted to, so we met up, and there's a horse farm that we always hunted, and we went out there, and I mean, it was probably the most miserable hunt I ever went on, because the ice on top of the snow, the melt, you could put your foot on it, step up, and you could lift your foot up off the ground, and then you'd fall through. And that was like that every step. You know, it would hold you, you know, one your other foot. So, I mean, the jarring and the walking was extremely crazy. And even Corey, he goes, there is no way we're training. And Joe went down through there. We ended up killing 11 coons that night.
Yeah.
But the thing that, you know, kind of always impressed me on that one is we got 5 or 6 coons. And I, you know, I was, back then we carried a lot. And so, but I told him, I said, dude, we got to stop and skin. And Corey's agreed. And so we was doing that. Well, Joe had left when I threw my coon coat on, and probably, you know, at the first couple coon, Joe came back in and laid curled up on my coat and went to sleep. And, you know, Corey looked at me and goes, what do you think that means? And I was like, he knows we ain't coming. You know, I was like, he figured he might as well come rest, I guess. It's the first time I ever seen him do that, you know. And we got the coon skin, and, you know, I told him to get up the coat, and before I got my coat on, he was treed probably 400 yards from us with a coon. And to this day, I believe he had already treed that coon. You know, he knew exactly. I mean, it was 10 seconds. I mean, when he got up, he was treed. And I told Corey, I believe that that dog was just smart enough that he went and found a coon, knew we weren't coming to him. So he just came back and hung out. And when we was ready to go, he just went. Treed coon. And, you know, that was with Joe, you know, I used to, which I think you probably remember, you know, I always kept track forever of every night we went coon hunting. And my goal was for a long time, and my stuff ended up getting ruined, so I never did it. But I was trying to see if there was ever a pattern. You know, if there's more, you know, certain times of the day, certain times of the night, certain early, late, you know, was there more sounds? Were there more boards? Did, you know, moon phases really affect you, you know, and stuff like that? Which the thing that I learned is, you know, if I was stupid enough to be out in the woods, a lot of times there was a coon as stupid as I was. But there was, you know, a couple hours in the night that it seemed like that you treed more coon, And there was a couple that was like, it didn't mean that you didn't trim. It just, if you took a year, you know, you may tree 100 of them within this one and then 15 within this hour that year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time we was hunting long enough hours, you know, that, I mean, we was getting pretty good records and the stuff like that. But Joe, when I got done doing that, when I quit kind of doing that, he treed over 3,000 coon.
That's,
I mean,
a lot,
like,
of coon.
I said, Joe was a coon dog.
Yeah. What was, you kind of touched on it earlier, but could you go a little deeper into kind of what style nose he had, as far as like more of a winding or more tracky nose? Or
so with Joe, you know, kind of stating back at the beginning, Joe was one of those dogs that he wanted to catch game, wanted to get game. And I always think that's what made him accurate. You never seen him wind, but you never seen him just grind the dirt out either. He was kind of that mid-range track, you know, his head kind of medium high. And like I said, you never seen him pace. He didn't. To me, his brain, like I said, worked different. If he got on a track that he really had struggled with, he could probably drag it out and push and stuff. He decided to be bigger, right? He found the track to where he could push it. And I mean, I think that's, it's probably a rarity in a lot of the dogs that I've owned over the years is, you know, I've had some that's been extremely well of winding and pushing that type track to another one that really grinds the track out and can figure some harder stuff out. And, you know, for the longest time, always believed that Joe was, you know, maybe just always finding the easy carrier. But I mean, again, anybody that can test, you know, that hunted with him, you could hunt him with some pretty good dogs, and he was the only one treeing coons. So they couldn't be the easiest coons. Mm-hmm. But he was unique on that. Like I said, because, you know, to me, the female, the Roxy female, his mother, was a lot like that. You just didn't see him just grinding a track out. You know, they just kind of had that pace, that middle head high type of movement. And, you know, you'd never seen him stand up. You know, the Bonnie Betty female, you know, was one that, you know, she'd stand up in the middle of cornfield and run straight and get treed. And, you know, my banner dog now kind of does both. You know, he's kind of, you know, he can wind or he can really drag a track. And, but Joe, like I said, he just, when he moved a track, it didn't take him too long to tree it. And, you know, I mean, he would go as long as ways, but I mean, like I said, you just didn't see him ever stand up and win, and you really never seen him just really push a track either.
Yeah. When he was in his prime and you pulled him out of the dog box, what would you be sitting there looking at? Just describe him as far as his conformation, his ear set, his head shape, just his overall appearance. Tell me what he'd look like.
So to me, Joe was a specimen. I mean, it was one where, you know, he was a buckskin blue. He had a small stripe down his face. When he was in good shape, you know, probably pushing right 60 pounds, he was heavily muscled. I mean, like I said, Joe, I mean, you could put your hand sideways in between his front legs. He was just a big, broad, you know, wasn't a real tall, real long dog. He was kind of a 20, but, you know, had a nice square head on him. You know, his ears, you know, a lot of people for the size dog said they were a little too big. But, I mean, again, if you folded them over, they went barely past the corner of his eye. He had a good ear set. You know, where they sat on his head, they kind of bent, broke a little bit. But like I said, to me, when he was cleaned up, that buckskin blue, I've always liked that color. It shined, and, you know, the amount of muscling that dog would have was ungodly. I always said if he was into cattle and wanted double muscling, you'd breed the Joe, right? I mean, that was his thing. I mean, you know, Joe, again, won the bench show, you know, everywhere. You know, I mean, he was a grand bench in a couple registrations and, you know, of course, a nice champion. And had won, you know, world bench, and he'd won the night world, you know, three times and a couple reserves. And but mentality, looks, you know, Joe is a natural bobtail, which always kind of had, didn't have that short, had that probably natural 4-5 inch tail, and produced, you know, a lot of people, you know, didn't prefer the little, that big. To me, gave you something to hold on to, right? Pull him out of a hole with. So it was enough. And, but yeah, Joe, to me, you know, head, body, deal, you know, was always, you know, that's the type of confirmation that I for sure want in mine. You know, like I said, it's crazy over the years, I've kind of got where I don't have too much of that bloodline left, and actually took a female a couple weeks ago and bred back to a grandpup of his. But the, you know, of course, his, you know, to add to that, right, had double dew claws. You know, a lot of people asked me when I named him if he was missing a couple toes, and well, he had extra toes, and you know, he had a the set on him was good. You know, this wasn't the floppy deal. And I know there's always been, you know, that argument whether you keep dew claws or not. I bred for it. Uh-huh. You know, like I said, I, you know, up north, you got a lot of snow and a lot of ice and stuff. You know, we had it here. I hunted up there. You know, people's had some issues with it. I've never had it. And I mean, it, to me, it's one of the traits of this dog and, you know, the mountain cur. And I always think they ought to breed for the things that are naturally to them. And so, I mean, with anybody that had any breeding of Joe and them, they probably have a dew claws. Because, I mean, he would definitely produce the dew claws and, you know, produce tons of puppies that, you know, confirmation and dealing, you know, to me, like I said, you know, confirmation and breed standard and stuff like that is always kind of what I look for when I breed my dogs. I want a pretty dog, mm-hmm, that can tree, you know, for sure.
Yeah, life's too short to hunt an ugly dog. There's no doubt about that.
Yep. I've had some, so.
What, do I remember him having a thing about skunks?
So, yes. And, I mean, when he got older in life, he kind of quit it, but Joe was a skunk killer. Now, if I had dogs that killed skunks like Joe, it still wouldn't bother me, because Joe very rare got sprayed. You know, he didn't mess around, didn't do it, and, I mean, he just went in there and chopped him and was done, and, you know, but, yeah, I mean, that was probably one of the things after when he was probably two, there wasn't too many of them around here either, because he would definitely, if another dog was with him, I mean, I swore sometimes he grabbed him to spray the other dog with him. But, yep, he definitely, when he was young, but, you know, kind of like I said, when he was young, you know, and where my dad, for probably the first couple of years of his life, did not really like him, because it seemed like, you know, like I said, Joe was looking for something to get, you know, I mean, that's how he hunted, and that's how he wanted, and, you know, and it just seemed like when I hunted with my dad, he'd come up and hunt a little bit, and like I said, Joe would, you know, kill something way too far before you get to it, and, you know, today, in today's world, with the Garmin and stuff like that, right, you could just go right to that spot, but back then, you know, especially when it's 400 or 500 yards, you couldn't. And, but, you know, like I said, skunk game, you know, I mean, had him, you know, catch a couple bobcats, you know, and I mean, like I said, he, at the beginning, he was definitely wanting game, and I think a lot of dogs that have that mentality, you know, that's what makes them honest and good, because they're just not wanting the tree, they're wanting the game, you know. And The dogs that I've had in my life that has been a little bit more gamey than tree minded tend to, you know, start out and end a little bit more accurate, because I mean, they they're just, you know, not wanting to tree. You know, I've had dogs over my lifetime too that would rather tree than mess with game. And, you know, some of them turned out really, really great, and other ones, I can't tell you, I was really pleased with them.
Yeah. To back up a little bit, what can you tell us about how you got started with tree dogs, Nick?
So, you know, again, I was luckier than most. Right? My family has been involved with the tree dogs and Ridge Mountain Terrier dogs and Kimmer dogs for a long time. My grandpa and A.D. Ledbetter wrote one of the very first books on them and was involved in it. You know, my parents, Donnie and Mary Clark, has, you know, at the time, you know, raised, and you know, you probably can't hardly find a original Mountain Terrier paper that won't have one of their dogs on it. I mean, and you know, luckily, like I said, for myself, was raised up into it and understood the value of trying to keep this dog, and the breeding program that my parents had, you know, kind of is what I still believe by today. And you know, I am one. I mean, I've had several hound guys over the years, you know, want to crossbreed, and I ain't never bred one. You know, and a lot of times I don't think it's going to improve my breed or their breed. And but yeah, like I said, it, you know, my Uncle Teddy was in it. You know, like I said, my family's been involved in it a long time. You know, I had the opportunity to meet a lot of great people and have a lot of influence on my, you know, with what I do and the dogs that I went to. And, you know, one of my first original Mountain Terrier that I really started competition on was, you know, Clark's DOG. And, you know, David Carr had the Tennessee Tig at the time and bred him to Calamity Jane. And, you know, like I said, it was kind of my kickstart of the really getting into the competition side and being out more in the public with it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your dad. I've got to talk with Donnie a handful of times. I believe whenever we went to Jamestown, I think about that point in time, he was on the OMCBA BOD, yeah, if I remember right. And I believe he told me that he had won Automokes at one point in life.
Yeah, and I don't say, you know, Dad had, we had the old Walker dog called House's Tom Tom and a couple other, but yeah, I mean, which a lot of people that know me and stuff like that, I've hunted behind about every type of tree dog out there, and I still a lot of times question myself today when I go out with the hound guys why I did it. And, you know, everybody's definition of a coon dog is by far different, but I've been around, you know, both, and there's things that I like about all of them and things that I could do without. And the, you know, to me, a coon dog, like, you know, to me, Joe, in my definition, was what I wanted. I mean, he would go as far as you wanted, would let him go. He was going to treat a coon. I could, if he could hear me, he would come back to me no matter. And, you know, to me, I didn't have to drive around, go get him. I had to do nothing. And, you know, trust me, there was times that we went further to him that, and a lot of times we created it ourselves. You know, we'd get to doing something, messing around or whatever. He'd look down and he'd check in twice and left, you know, again. And, but yeah, I was going to say it's, you know, preferences. Dude, let me, you've hunted enough, even the cur dog, what people, you know, one person considers junk, the other person will consider it to be the best thing ever. And I've tried to keep a truly open mind, and, you know, I mean, kind of go back to the breeding program of my parents. You know, they didn't get stuck on a singular thing. They definitely, you know, bred to what worked. And, you know, again, the Junior Jukebox is probably, to me, one of their staple dogs, but, you know, adding, you know, the Bonnie Betty to it. And of course, you know, had a lot of streak bred dogs and some Kimmer bred dogs and some Butch, you know, I mean, you name it. They just kind of found what worked. And, you know, it's kind of like I said, the all around dog is still, and a lot of the biggest, you know, things with puppies, right? If you can produce them, that it doesn't take a guy that hunts all the time, or, you know, just a family person or somebody the first time they get them, that they can have success with them is a little bit easier. And I mean, kind of the world changed, right? Everybody wants that 1 year wonder dog. And a long time ago, it just seemed like they were far and few between. And, you know, the Ramblin' Rosie female was for sure probably my first, you know, that just seemed like when they were puppies, they'd tree everything. And then, you know, I got Super Freak and Joe, and been lucky to hunt behind and handle a ton of dogs in my lifetime. And I mean, we've talked about it over the years where, you know, it's, you're lucky to have one or two super nice dogs, and I've been lucky to have several and handle several. And, you know, I definitely give credit to, you know, my family, you know, what they did with the cur dogs.
Mm-hmm. One story from one of the nights that we hunted, that I've told a few times over the years is, we were hunting there. We had a whole mess of dogs out. We had 8 or 9 dogs out in the woods, and, they got on an armadillo race, and that armadillo came bouncing by us like a bowling ball running 90 mile an hour at about waist level. And it's a wonder one of us didn't get taken out by it.
You know, the armadillos, right? That's a story for itself. But, you know, I was winning hunt after hunt with Joe everywhere, and it took me like 3 years to win a hunt down in Arkansas with him. Because all you do is go down there and shred armadillos, you know. And I remember one guy telling me, he said, you ought to fix that. And I was like, you know, I don't have armadillos, you know. It's like, but it took me probably 3 years down there before he, you know, actually coon hunted instead of armadillo getting.
Yeah. So what else can you tell me just about what Joe was like as a reproducer?
So, you know, Joe had, you know, several great puppies. Like I said, should have did a lot better job of keeping up with several of them. But, you know, sold a few that I tried to get back and from them. And Tim Freaky out of West Virginia had raised, you know, a handful out of the Freak and Joe cross that did extremely good. I mean, probably one of my favorite crosses with Joe was with the Super Freak. And, you know, I actually have a female that's out of that cross. She's 16, still looks good, and, you know, Lightning. And, but, you know, the probably known wise, you know, Joe Money was probably, you know, where, I mean, when you went to Jamestown with us, right, we took him.
I think he was just 6 or 7 months old then.
Yeah. And the funniest story, again, talking about wishing you had cameras and with video and stuff like that. You remember the dash race with him?
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? Turned him loose, and he shot off like a rocket, and then the other dogs kind of was beside of him. His eyes got real big and jumped up in the air, jumped on the back of one dog, kicked off, and jumped all the way across the pile, spun around, and looked at us with big old bug eyes like, what was that? But, you know, again, talking about a pup that, you know, started quick and fast out of, you know, I mean, Joe Money was by far that dog, right? I mean, at that time was placing in some big hunts with him, and, you know, at 6 months old, went to the national hunt of North Iowa and got third in squirrel hunt, third in coon hunt, then took him to Elnora, you know, the month after that, and placed in the top 5 with him both day and night with him there. And like I said, he was a quick starter. He reminded me a lot of Joe, except it's a small version, right? Joe Money wasn't the size of Joe, and the other male, the littermate to him, Ruger, which, you know, Ruger won a couple world champions and stuff, but Ruger was kind of more Joe's size, and he was a dark brindle and really super nice dog. And Joe Money kind of was a shorter loop dogs, and I wanted, kind of like you said, would grind them tracks out and stuff, but treat a ton of coon. I mean, with Ruger and Joe Money, the first year that we hunted them too, which would have been, they'd have probably been 10, 11 months old, we 238 coon with them too. And I mean, they were super, but that cross for sure, it day or night, it didn't matter. Some of the ones that I kept over the years myself that, I hunted in some of the hunts, and, there was a dog called Ringo, and then I had one that Clark's Buck, and then Josie was another one. But he produced, like I said, should have probably kept better track of a lot of them, but there were several of them. I'd sold to a guy that competition hunt a couple pups out of him, and I'd go down and hunt with him some, and that's all he hunted. I mean, they were super nice, super. And I asked him, I said, why don't you ever take him? And he honestly just told me, he said, I'm not representing your bloodline. I mean, they were good enough that they should have been out and winning, which I tried to buy the male dog later on off of him. I mean, wouldn't sell him. But like I said, I hopefully we'll get a little bit of that back. I have a female called Trixie, which goes back to Banner. She's a Banner puppy. She's 5 and has a, some Bonnie Betty and some breeding and stuff. But then I bred her to a grandpup of 2-toed Joe called Rock, and which is a Joe Money and Lightning, puppy, which the 2-toed Joe, super freak. So hopefully with it, the papers on this will have a whole lot of stuff in it that we used to really have and push. And I'm hoping to get some of that back and, be dog poor again after many.
I know that feeling. Well, as we're getting close to being out of time, what do you feel like Joe's biggest strengths and weaknesses were?
So, I mean, his strength was by far, it wasn't going to matter where you turned him out or when you turned him out, he was going to treat coon. I mean, everybody that hunted with him, and like I said, you hate bragging up a dog and stuff like that, but the consistency of him was, if other dogs couldn't treat him, he's going to treat him. I mean, whether there was frost on the ground, it was full moon, there was snow, it was pouring rain, like I said, he was going to go find a coon and treat it. And I mean, the accuracy and the handling was a plus with him. And for me, it's not a weakness, but definitely the weakness was his tree style. And the reason I would only say it's weakness because that was the thing that, when you hunted with the hound guys and stuff, he could tree all the coon and all they couldn't get over it. But I still, in my personal opinion, it actually felt like that it gave him a little extra, especially if he was hunting long and deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, to kind of further how much, when you hunted with people. So one of my friends had a friend that had hounds that wanted to buy it was one of the Joe and Freak puppies. So he called when he was ready and asked if we'd take it down there, because he wanted to see how these, cur dogs work. And I said, yeah, we can do that. And so I took Joe down there, and the buck pup that I talked about earlier, they were probably 9-10 months old. And Jake had a younger dog that, they weren't doing nothing great, but they were doing enough that really you like taking them to the woods. And we went to his first spot, and we was getting ready to dump out. And he told us, he said, well, I've been here for 14 years, and we've never treated a coon on the outside in this place. And I kind of looked at him like, well, why are we, if you want to see what's going on, why are we here? Right. Mm-hmm. I turned Joe loose, and we got walking and telling stories and stuff. And probably 15 minutes later, Joe treed probably 400 or 500 yards from us. we walked to him, coon on the outside. I kicked him loose again in a little bit. He was probably 600-700 yards treed. And the two pups we had, they'd go in, tree with him a little bit, come back, run around, let's go up to the tree. And on our way to him, they had found a possum that was probably 10 foot up in tree, and they were treeing and jumping, and, you know, I knocked it out, and they were playing with it. And then we finished that, and we walked on, and Joe had another coon. So he told us, he said, well, I got one more spot I want to take you. So we go to this spot, and he said that they've never, ever made a tree at this spot. And I'm like, what are we doing? And so we kicked him loose, which I told him, I said, you know, that was the difference between Joe. Joe was going to go to get a coon. And he probably went half a mile in treed. And pups had found another possum. You know, we played with it for a little bit. Then we went on to Joe. And when we, it was just probably 10, 12 trees out in the middle of a pasture that was way back there. When he's walking out that pasture, you know, the pups would run 400-500 yards up there, bark with him a handful of times, then they'd come flying back, right? And they kind of did this all the way till we got to Joe. You know, they came back 4 or 5 times to go tree with him, and he had a couple coon in the tree there. So once we got walking back, Jake asked him, he said, what do you think of the cur dog? He goes, you know, I'm not impressed at all. You know, that old dog doesn't bark real, real hard. You know, and them pups, all they did was mess possums and go tree and quit treeing and go tree. And I looked at him and said, you took us to a spot in 15 years, you've never seen a coon. And there's nothing that impresses you. And he was like, no. I mean, he said, that dog doesn't tree hard, Dad. And I'm like, and I remember this day, we got back the truck and put dogs in the box, closed my gate. And he was like, hey, you going to give me my pup? And I said, dude, you don't have enough money to own a pup for me. And I mean, I still believe that today. But a lot of it, like I said, was because how he didn't bark 100 barks a minute, right? And to me, you know, if to have a dog that can go find a coon where, no, you know, you've never been able to find one, should impress you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Nick, I sure appreciate you giving us some of your time and coming on here and letting me interview you for this.
Nope, I definitely appreciate it. And like I said, Joe was by far a good one. And, you know, time goes by quickly, and you always try to spend a long time replacing dogs like that, and you just can't.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's hard. Well, everybody, keep wearing out that boot leather. I just want to give everyone that's listening a sincere thank you. Getting this podcast going has been a project. I really hope you're enjoying it, and if you don't mind, give the show a good rating and review wherever you're listening to it at, or share it on your social media to help get some traction. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to your feedback.